RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, food nation, healthy nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one delectable, crunchy audio treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am the one and only Dr. Mike, and I have my kitchen compatriot with me for culinary CPR segment this week, the one and only Luca Parrish. You know him, you love him. You can't live without him. He's the master chef from New England. I had the great pleasure to be with him just a few weeks ago. We did some projects in New Hampshire, so I want to give a shout out to all the folks out in Keene, New Hampshire, where he's from. What a wonderful town. What a great community coming out and supporting to all the folks that were there for the charity dinner that Luca does, and he's very humble about it, does an amazing amount of charitable work for that community as well. Thumbs up. There was a panel tasting, and I got to share with you, you know, every panel has that guy. I was that guy. So I'm willing to take some tomatoes if people are still throwing them from Keene there, Luca.
yeah, you were the tough one, man. You did a good job with that, though. You definitely played
but
your part.
But you know, and I got to share this with folks, and if the folks in Keene are listening, they'll get a kick out of this, is that, you know, when we finished the charitable bin and we went back, all of us judges reviewed our scoring and our numbers. And I know it sounded like, you know, I was way off in different, you know, direction, that I was way harder and I'd have the lowest scores, you know, for for the groups there. But I got to tell you, you know, the chef that I was sitting next to, she and I had exactly, now this is out of a possible number of 150, we had exactly the same score for one team, and I think the difference in the other team was 5. So, you know, I was giving you entertainment value. So I just want you to know that I was throwing out the love, but it was all entertainment value.
we had a blast. It was an honor to have you down, Doc Mike. I mean, we're in Keene, a small little town, but you saw the community spirit that was here, the people that came out that wanted to be part of an event like ours. And that's just a small drop in the bucket of what this town does. So being part of it and having you, you know, I'd got so many compliments afterwards about having how you came down. They all started looking you up and then started seeing the stuff because I said, oh, you know, I have this cookbook author, chef, cardiologist coming down. And they're like, oh, who does Luca know? I said, oh, I know some people. And then you get down here and a lot of people did some research on you and were there excited. So.
You're like my driver, you know, for my honeymoon. We were Sandros, who's out of Rome, and Sandros. By the time we were done, number one, you know, I became a big fan of seatbelts driving around Rome, and two, because Sandros also lived in New York City. So driving between Rome and New York City, you can imagine, you know, it was an amusement park tour of the monuments of Rome, but Sandros, you know, was a little more than a driver because. Everywhere I went, you know, there was this huge line. I mean, hey, you know, we were going to see nothing but the Forum, the way that line was wrapping around the blocks. And Sandra just looks and goes, so you guys want to see the Forum, eh? And we're like, well, yeah, of course we do. My wife's never saying want to definitely. He goes, okay, you wait right here. I know a guy. And he comes back after he goes around this little tourist thing where they're selling tour books. He goes around the back. He comes back with these two tickets and he's like, okay, you see this line here? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm thinking, I'm not waiting at the end of this line because you'll be picking me up tomorrow morning. And he goes, okay, you go to the right of that. You cut all the way to the front. You show this to the guard at the door. You go in. And I'm thinking, and I walk in. We get out. It's a black window in Mercedes. We get out and we start walking to the front of the line. And all the people are looking back and forth saying, it doesn't look like Brad Pitt. You know, who is this guy? And then we walk to the front. And sure enough, you know, there are guards there, right? And I'm giving him these things and I'm thinking, oh, my God, these are like counterfeit. And I'm going to be, you know, in an Italian prison for the next 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, and really, I'm thinking like, okay, do I know the embassy number? What am I going to do when they arrest me? You know, and I'm thinking, what is, you know, get down on the ground, put your hands in the air in Italian, because I didn't learn that, you know, in popular phrases. Conversational Italian didn't have that. And he looks at these things and goes, okay, go in. And we had free run, you know. Yeah. So what the folks in Key don't know is when you, a real Italian guy, say, "Hey, I know this guy.
I know a guy.
You know some people."
Well, we had a blast having you down. Thanks so much for being part of it, man. And yeah, we can't wait to have you back. And let's see what comes up for 2018 and beyond as far as us getting together and doing some stuff. It'd be great to show the folks that listen to our show what we look like in person. I mean, I think they know what you look like. I don't know if everybody knows what I look like, but we'll put the two of us on the screen together. We'll make some dishes and then cook together someday. So thanks again. I really appreciate it. And I'm back on your show today and let's get to cooking. We're going to be talking chicken thighs today, Mike. It's going to be one of
Mediterranean thighs. Now, we can get in trouble for saying that in this day and age, so I want to clarify that we are talking about chicken thighs.
Well, Mike, even if I got in trouble, I am the world's greatest thigh guy. Thighs are my thing.
Oh no. Yeah, you're going to get us canceled.
Look,
I'm going to get that FCC letter. Oh, jeez.
I got to tell you, when it comes to if someone says to me, and I've had it asked, and you probably get this question, like, what's your favorite protein? Or what's food you wish you could do everything with? Everyone who knows me knows it's the chicken thigh. I will take that over any cut of meat. I will take that over any fish. Oh. I love the flexibility, the moisture content, the fat content. Everything about a chicken thigh is perfect.
I'm telling you, Lou, I just came to me in a flash. I've got your Food Network show.
Oh,
It's Chef Luca, the thigh guy.
The thigh guy.
The thigh guy. There you go. I mean, you know people are going to tune in. We know we got Purdue to underwrite this thing. So
exactly.
Just remember me when you're rich and famous. I gave it to you. You heard it first here, folks. Luca Paris, the thigh guy.
And I feel bad for every person. Oh, this is going to get worse. Every person, because that was a start about talking about chicken breast at the same time. But think of it. I mean, think of there aren't very better cuts of meat that allow you to do so much with what it costs. I mean, it's also inexpensive.
Let's stop right there because you bring up a great point. And I was just speaking with someone not too long ago, and they gave me a fascinating statistic. So, in the U.S., because the skinless, boneless chicken breast has become kind of the go-to convenience cut, if you will.
Yep.
That, you know, the darker meat, which many Americans have moved away from, although, as I think you're going to tell us and show us with this recipe, is incredibly flavorful, incredibly delicious. But we actually end up exporting a lot of our dark meat chicken because there's no market for it here. And I think we give or sell about a billion, that is with a B, folks, a billion pounds of dark meat chicken, which would be the chicken thighs and the legs, the drumsticks, to Mexico every single year. So, you know, when you're eating that taco, you're probably getting something that was exported from the U.S., went to Mexico. They turned it in that dark meat into delicious chicken taco, and then you came back and you're buying it at the drive-thru.
I didn't even know that happened, but it's not because of me they're exporting chicken thighs, because if I could have it everywhere.
Because you're Chef Luca, the thigh guy.
Because I'm the thigh guy. I just don't think what I love about it, as far as chicken thighs go. It's not only the cost, right? You can get the boneless. I wouldn't. I get the bone in with the skin on, unless you're breaking down your own chicken and you're creating your own. But if you're doing a lot and you're having, make sure the bone's in there. It gives it more flavor. The skin on will give it a ton of flavor. It gets nice and crispy. And it's forgiving as far as a meat goes. Because you overcook chicken, we both know what happens.
Right.
It's going to be dry.
Oh.
You know, chicken breast, it's going to be dry.
It's like chewing a cotton ball.
It just ruins the whole dish. I'm talking, what we're going to talk about is braising chicken thighs for an hour. You could do that, or you could pound them out and cook them like a scallopini in minutes. No matter what you do to them, they're still going to be wonderful.
And I'm going to share with you, Before we get a recipe, one of the other things, because, you know, wings are such a big, we've got all these, you know, franchises that are just based on chicken wings. But folks, you can take the bones out and stuff chicken thighs. You get a lot more meat. You do these boneless stuffed chicken thighs, fill them with some of your favorite thighs. And that's one of the things I do for a Super Bowl instead of just, you know, wings that I make from scratch. You know, I save some of these chicken when I'm breaking down the chickens, as you said, as you just suggested, I save those thighs and then I do a bunch of stuffed boneless thighs. They're great for party appetizers, Super Bowl party. So I think one of the things you're highlighting is, folks, this is not only economical, but it's versatile.
Now, and we're I'm going to take a jump over from chicken to turkey because we we're not far away from being at Thanksgiving. One of my favorite dishes to make of all time with turkey has nothing to do with the breast or the whole turkey. It's the chicken thigh where you open it up and then you stuff it and do a roulade of it. And it's so big, the chicken, the turkey thigh.
Tell us what a roulade is for folks who don't know.
Well, it's rolled up meat. So you would, the way you would take the bone out of a turkey thigh, you'd have to cut it along both sides of the thigh bone right in there and then try to stay along the bone line and pull that out. And it kind of opens up. So if you just cut it a little bit more and butterfly or open up the meat that you have there, put on whatever you want, whether it's cheese, whether it's aromatics, or any type of herb or garlic or anything, onions, and then you roll it up just like you're rolling anything. Put a tie around it where you put a couple of strings around it and then roast that off in the oven with the skin already on it. It will give you the best. I mean, you could do turkey for two for Thanksgiving instead of buying a whole turkey. It's going to be tender. It's going to be moist. It's all dark meat, which is the best part about it. I'm telling you, the chicken thighs, the turkey thighs, you smoke a chicken thigh, it's like having chicken bacon. You know, people always talk about turkey bacon. Turkey bacon, actually, if you just smoke the thighs and slice them thin, you have turkey bacon. That's where it comes from. So I just love, there's nothing you can't do with a thigh. And I will.
Because you are.
If I could open a restaurant that just served chicken thighs, I would. That might be my next food truck.
Not only can you. So on your Food Network show, Chef Luca, the thigh guy, are we going to do thighs? But you're going to roll them up and smoke them.
I've had like four.
Because hey, if the FCC is going to yank our license, we might as well go out in a blaze of glory.
Well, good, because I have like four or five comments I can make that I would really just end the show tomorrow. I think we're good though. I think maybe we stick to our recipe and go with that. But you know,
speaking of which, we are actually, folks, we are getting to this Mediterranean braised chicken thigh eventually. But it's kind of like, well, you just got back from a cruise, so we're kind of like cruising around the recipe.
Ooh,
so eventually, we're gonna get there.
You're good with those puns. You're very good with those puns. So
practice.
And another one of the things about when we talk about the recipe, I'm going to give you a simple preparation method. And then what you're going to be able to do from this when we're done is add whatever else you want to add into it. So, for instance, two things I like to do with chicken thighs. The braising method is most important. So whether you're using a cast iron pan or you get one of those Le Creuset cast irons with the enamel coating, whichever you're going to use, I like using those enamel cast iron pans, those Dutch ovens. They don't have to be super high like you're doing for a big, long-time braise. They could be one of those shorter ones if you have that already at home. Or you could do this in a regular pan and just let it slow cook. Now, the braising technique is basically breaking down some of the fats. Braising is great for long-term cooking, for especially things that have high connective tissue and the sinew that holds it together, and then it breaks it past 180 degrees to start breaking down those fats. Now, the thing about the chicken thighs is you do have a little bit more fat connective tissue, but it breaks down quicker. So 1 hour of braising a chicken thigh is going to make it super tender. And like I said, you could actually do scallopini of chicken thighs where you pound them out like you do chicken breast. You could bread them or you could do fried chicken or whatever. So you could do it in different techniques. It doesn't need the long-term cooking, but the long-term cooking imparts flavors. So with this enamel cast iron pan, about a couple tablespoons of oil, four skin on bone in chicken thighs, salt and pepper, some garlic cloves, whole garlic cloves that are peeled, and any aromatics you want. So onions, greens, potatoes, beans, herbs, all that kind of stuff. You could pick whatever you want. Let's say in this case, I'm going to use whole lemons, onions, or leeks in this case, whole lemons, okay. Leeks, the roasted garlic I already have, and then we'll put in, just for the sake of it, some cannellini beans, so we have them, and then some olives, because I want to give it that Mediterranean flavor. So the lemon and the olive, and my herbs will be thyme and rosemary, thyme being the biggest
oh, yum.
One. And then we need some liquid. A little more lemon juice from that lemon, because we're going to use the lemon zest, white wine, and you can use any kind of wine you want, and a chicken stock, and that's the way to do it. Now it goes from the pan to the oven. So you set your oven at about 350 degrees, heat your cast iron pan, medium heat, and then pat your chicken dry. It's important that, you know, you start with a dry chicken because the skin needs to be dry because it's going to sear and get a little crunchiness to it. We will get rid of some of that by braising it, but you do want to have a dry chicken to start with, salt and pepper, and then one of the things I like to do too is sometimes is take the fresh herbs, and you could kind of I think we talked about this when you were here and you were on my show when we were talking about turkey stuffing flavoring underneath the skin, so you can put some of the herbs under the skin while you're cooking it, and it's a nice little touch, but you don't need to do it. And then season both sides of the chicken. We talked about salt and pepper on there. And then put it skin side down in the hot pan for about 6 to 8 minutes. I actually don't like to move it at this point, because especially when you're talking about the cast iron or the coated cast irons, you don't have to move it. They're not going to stick. They're not going to burn. But it's going to get this nice crispy skin on it. So 6 to 8 minutes, and I like to let it get really crispy. And then you flip it over. And here's the one thing. If you try to turn over the chicken too soon, it might actually stick to the pan and rip your skin off.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to do that, right? So then we turn over the chicken. We're going to add in the garlic cloves and let those brown while we're cooking the other side. And then we're going to remove the chicken altogether. Take out the chicken, put it on the side, because we're going to be adding it back into the braise. Pop in the onions, lemons, the olives, the leeks. If you're using shallots, the beans, anything like that, start putting those things in, and then go ahead.
Let me just ask, when you're doing the beans, are these beans pre-soaked? Are they pre-cooked? Are you getting them out of a can?
Yeah, I mean, I'll generally get them out of the can. If I don't get them out of a can, and then I've rinsed them, if I don't get them out of a can, what I'll do is I'll get them, you pre-soak them till they get soft, because this braising method is only going on for 45 minutes to an hour, I want the beans to be ready in that time. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Okay.
So you want to have a softer bean to start with. Then we start adding in all those ingredients. And then at this point, we're going to add the chicken back in, the wine, deglaze the pan, add the vegetable stock, cover the pan, and we're letting it go for about 45 minutes in that oven. You pop it into the oven that we preheated for 45 minutes. It's all cooking down. All those flavors are cooking down. Absolutely wonderful. We're going to bring it out probably 15 minutes before it's done, put it back on the stovetop, making sure that everything's starting to reduce around there, taking the cover off. Now, the chicken's cooked all the way through and tender and moist. The aromatics are all cooked together. Add in the last second some briny elements like capers or olives. Well, I mentioned the olives. I already have them in there. But some capers. And then last second, you got some capers, some fresh herbs to bring out that flavor of the herbs again, and boom, you're done serving this over, you could serve it over just about anything, but I like it by itself. You could do it with some potatoes, some roasted potatoes, and you can't go wrong. Or
I'm thinking polenta.
Over polenta is a great way to do it. This is a great recipe. We talk about chicken thighs, but if you have your folks out there that want to do the next level, this same exact recipe you could take rabbit and do it with. And it's kind of, I stole a little bit of this. This is similar to a rabbit recipe my mom used to make when we were younger. She didn't do the olives and the capers, but she had a lot of the same flavors when she would build that dish. And I do it now with chicken thighs because I can't get my kids for the life of me to eat a rabbit. So we go with the chicken thighs. And there's more meat on this, so it's great too. But it's a simple, simple dish. You got that lemon, you got the wine, You got the chicken. I mean, just, oh, I'm hungry now. I want to eat.
Well, and actually, you just, believe it or not, that's funny you should mention that, because I was at the store and I just picked up a local farm-raised organic rabbit yesterday. So I've got that in the fridge. So I'm actually going to be using this recipe this weekend, because I think the combination, the herbs and wine, it sounds absolutely, you know, fantastic. And I myself am a big fan of rabbit. So, I absolutely love it. And I think it's sort of an automatic little portion control there too.
Oh yeah. Because if they only made rabbits the size of chickens, it would be okay. But no, and those are absolutely great too. And I love everything about a rabbit. And then maybe we should do a show on rabbit sometimes. Maybe while after you do your recipe,
we should. That's a little exotic.
Yeah, that'd be fun to do a little bit of that, and a couple more of those exotic items. But again, what I say, if you haven't tried chicken thighs, whether you are always thinking breast is the most important part, or is the only part you can eat, or because of the fattiness, I'm telling you, there's tons of flavor here. And you know, you speak more to the health benefits. So I don't think there's anything bad about eating a chicken thigh, is there?
Well, I'd say actually, you know, in kind of looking, and we talked a little bit about this when we did the book dinner, when we look at cultures, contemporary cultures, when we look at ancient cultures, and we look particularly towards, you know, the health aspects of that, what we find is when cultures are very healthy, folks are living longer, they're living healthier, that they tend, when they have their proteins, they tend to utilize all those proteins. And the evidence seems to suggest that as omnivores, our bodies are built not to be finicky eaters, not to just, you know, eat the white breast meat, but that we derive a lot of benefit from these types of proteins and compounds, like the collagens, like these other types of connective tissues that are broken down and made very palatable and absorbable for our body's usage with cooking methods, you know, like a braise, et cetera. And, you know, I think for our audience, if folks just kind of Google, you know, bone broth, you'll hear all these, you know, terms about the miracle health benefits. You know, bone broth, you're making a bone broth, folks, when you're doing a braise. I mean, really, that's what we're doing. So you're getting all those benefits in there, and you don't have to pay like $8 for 2 ounces of, you know, some commercial bone broth. You can make it yourself. And I find that it adds just a richness and a flavor and kind of a depth of characters that you get from, you know, these types of meats. You know, it sort of like reminds me, Chef, you know, with wine. And I remember when I first sort of started studying wines, I got some great advice. And somebody said, well, you know, anybody can go in to a wine shop or at a look at a wine, you know, menu at a restaurant and say, you know, I got $500, bring me a good bottle of wine, and you will get a very good bottle of wine.
Right.
That takes no skill, and it's kind of boring. Whereas, you know, if you can go in and you know your stuff and you say, hey, you know, this bottle here that's $12.50, it's killer. And, you know, and so as a chef, you know, I like taking these challenging kind of cups, the awful bits as well. And when we look at a lot of the food cultures from around the world, and I think you can speak to this, really, Italian cooking is no different. These five-star menu items, a lot of them started as peasant food. Right.
Every time you mentioned polenta the other day, just recently, while we were, you know, when you were talking about goes on to this chicken, and let me tell you, I've seen polenta on a lot of menus for $10 and $12 and $13, that and mushrooms, and I still remember it's a poor people's food in all of Italy, much like grits are down south, and they show up everywhere, you know. So yeah, that's the way it started. Most of this started as inexpensive ways to feed the family. A lot of the charcuterie that you grew up with, I grew up with going to Italy and enjoying, it's because they had to preserve all this food, right? And it wasn't they were trying to be these fancy haute cuisine chefs doing charcuterie boards. They were like, well, we need to make sausage or this pig's going to go bad after we kill it. Okay, there you go. And that's what we'll have, dry sausage all season. That's exactly what they came from. And we're just taking advantage of it now with restaurants like mine. So,
I see it in this dish that you just did, where you talked about, and maybe it was sort of some kind the way you added some beans. Okay, that's poor man's protein. So
right,
you're
exactly.
augmenting what was probably, you know, a sparse serving of chicken. You're trying to serve, you know, a family. Well, you stretch that dollar, and you can do that today, folks, as well. But you're also adding, you know, a whole nother layer of textures and tastes and, you know, flavors, you know, by adding those beans in there. But, you know, for the peasant, you know, 500 years ago, it was, you know, how do I stretch this and feed my family? Beans are cheap. You know,
right.
And like you said, now you go at a 5-star restaurant and Gordon Ramsay's folks are charging you like $49.95 extra for the heirloom cannoli, you know, beans, you know, the cannoli beans to, you know, put in there. So you know, it can go from a practical to absolutely ridiculous. And you know, hopefully you and I kind of stay somewhere between those extremes. Not
well,
often, but
right.
hopefully
it's
something.
And I think the practical part of it. It goes back to I think the essence of the way we want to cook and the way we should be cooking is staying out of the way of the ingredients and not getting crazy. Finding good ingredients. Don't try to one-up yourself. I feel there's a world of one-upmanship with anything, whether it's how much you spice a buffalo wing to how hoppy you make a beer to what level of olive you could find to put in a dish. And there's a point of diminishing returns with all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Where it's not as good as what it's going to cost you to do. So I look at it and say, okay, let's find the best ingredients that we can all that are appreciated and attractive to all of us, and cook with those, and you're going to make amazing food. That's it. That's the end of the story when it comes to cooking. And you know, when you buy cheap stuff, you're going to make cheap stuff. When you buy good stuff, you're going to make good stuff. And that's what we try to do. And if you source local, you source nice, good quality food, you're going to make good quality food. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all about starting and sourcing like you do. Sourcing as a chef, as I like to say, you know, and it's about the quality food. And I think, you know, it's something that from my days in the kitchen, I remember, which is in the back of my head, I just kept this mantra. It's about the food, stupid, you know, and I would just be saying that to myself, you know, it's, you know, I want the food, you know, I'm the supporting cast out there, you know, the plate is making its entree. I want the plate to look good. I want it to smell good. I want it to taste good, but it's all about the food. It's, you know, I'll get my kudos if I earn them. But it's, you know, too many times the chefs are trying to put themselves on a plate when they should be putting their food on a plate. I think,
exactly.
In my opinion.
Exactly. That's the best way to talk about it. Yeah. So with the chicken, I think the easiest thing to do to tell people about is get local, good chicken. If you get local, you know what? Another thing I wanted to tell you about the chicken, if you're getting local chicken, sometimes because of the way they're raised and they're not injected and they don't, let's just say if you don't cook them correctly, they could be a little bit drier, at least the ones that I found in this area. This whole braising technique with the chicken thighs will help that as well. I just wanted to make sure we got it out there because we have a local farm, Walpole Valley Farms, and it has incredible chicken. But I found that braising them works best for those chickens because they go a lot further, because they're not as, you know, you and I both know when you buy some stuff at the stores, they're plumper than they should be. I think I don't know whether it's the way they raise them or what they do.
Well, I think there's a couple of things there, and you bring up a great point. One is that sometimes, particularly when you're buying the pre-cut, you know, versions, they're water injected because you're paying by the pound. So if I fill
right.
it up with a brine solution, which they say, oh, we're adding the brine, you know, so home cooks can keep it tender and juicy. What they're doing is they're selling you salt water at like $6 a pound is what they're doing.
Right,
and you don't get that when you source. Number one, as you're saying, so I think that is very important. And two, I just want to let the folks know, and you probably know this if you ever try to roast a whole chicken or cook a whole turkey, is that the proper serving temperature for the thighs is a little bit higher than the breast. So in the breast, I'm always kind of pulling it at 160, looking for, you know, 165.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the thighs, you want to go a little bit higher than that. You know, probably about 170 or so. So, you know, it's important, particularly if you are buying a more commercial, more industrial bird, that you want to make sure that you're not serving raw chicken.
Right.
And so you'll find that it'll take a little bit higher temperature to get that to that desired range when you're working with the thighs as opposed to the breast. And that's sort of another reason why working with chicken thighs is so great too, because you're working with one. You don't have to worry about the breast cooking at a different temperature and drying out by the time the thighs are cooked. You're just cooking all thighs.
And eating thighs. Best meat ever.
because you are
the
Chef
guy.
Luca, the thigh guy.
All right, man. That's where that show ends right there. You can't go any further now.
Oh, I'm telling you right now, you're going to be getting a call from Scripps. You know, food guy from Guy's Grocery Games is going to come up, and he may actually be trying to steal that from you. Knowing him, yeah, he'll go, hey, I'm the thigh guy. All right. So anything else to add to that recipe? Because I think we've taken it pretty much full circle from the depths of depravity, to the heights of haute cuisine.
We've
done it.
One of the cool things about
it. It's perfect.
Yeah. One of the cool things about it is the versatility of it. When you see the recipe that I'm going to be sending you, it's basically very simple in its presentation. But think about what else you could add to it. Like we talked about adding different aromatics or different vegetables or different whatever, but even just adding tomato sauce and some hot pepper to it. Now you got a spicy version, using some adobo spices. You get some, you do that. It's incredible. And when you talk about the different cuisines around the world, everybody has a chicken thigh recipe. You could do a Mediterranean version with the olives and the lemon and the herbs. You could do more of a Spanish version. Which is when we talk this type of Spanish, think Mexico, and you could bring in, the tomatoes, and you could bring in the spice, the jalapeno, and then you could bring in those flavors there. You could go more Asian, there's no end in sight to what you can do when you're doing chicken thighs. And I really feel maybe that's the book I've never been able to write, the cookbook I've never been able to write. Maybe I should just take chicken thighs and go for a spin on those. And
there you have it, folks. About this recipe of chicken thighs and then Chef Luca, the thigh guy. So thank you, Chef. And until we meet again, folks, may the only pain in your life be champagne, which is great with chicken thighs, I might add. Okay. That was too much.